Hello and welcome to the Happier Life Project, brought to you by the free award-winning mental health and wellness app, My Possible Self. I'm Gabby, and today's episode is a big, big topic. I did think about splitting the conversation into two parts, but really it's a start to finish listen and it didn't feel right to kind of break it up. But it's absolutely worth your time and investment. We're looking at roots and relationships, specifically how we can heal from childhood origin wounds to break unhealthy relationship patterns. Now, you might be thinking, well, I had a great childhood. My caretakers weren't perfect, but they did the best. They were never abusive or anything like that. I've got no issues there. Well, that may be so. But what about what you observed when you were a child? Was your mum present? That could be mentally, emotionally, or physically. Did your dad have a bit of a short fuse and a nasty temper? Did you observe your parents keeping secrets from each other or gaslight? What we absorb as children and how we internally and externally react to what we observe, we can carry through into our adult life and relationships. Maybe you're in a relationship and you think about how a partner might have done something pretty small and unintentionally really pissed you off, but it triggered something. So you reacted in a way that was so disproportionate to the actual circumstance. This would be what today's guest calls unresolved wounds trying to get our attention. Vienna Farron is a licensed marriage and family therapist and one of New York City's most sought after relationship therapists. She's practiced therapy for more than 15 years and is the creator of @mindfulmft on Instagram, where she's helping well over 700,000 people around the world heal their childhood wounds. She's also author of the incredible book, The Origins of You, which is about changing the unwanted patterns in your life by changing your relationship to your past wounds. It's a phenomenal read that I highly recommend you checking out. So, without further ado, ready to find a healthier, happier you? Let's get started. Thank you for your time and thank you for this book. I think this book has helped me more than like any other book I've read, honestly. But
wow. Oh. That means a lot.
We'll get into it. I'll start properly. To welcome Vienna Farron to the Happier Life Project. As I just gushed, I'm a big fan of your work now, thanks to this book, The Origins of You, and so many aha moments. Being a licensed marriage and family therapist, one of New York City's most sought after relationship therapists, I can't help but think it's because of all this work. Because when you start to actually look into the family origins, definitely for me, there was all these light bulb moments about how I've shown up in relationships, mainly romantic ones as well, and may have unrealized that I was like self-sabotaging sometimes as a coping mechanism. And this was all just coming up by, you know, reading your book as a curious journalist that's researching a subject matter, you know? So I guess we should start really by, for anybody that's meeting you for the first time, talking a little bit about this, the origins of you. And when was the light bulb moment for you? I know that at the start of the book, you begin with sharing a story about your parents' divorce, but when was the light bulb moment for you that childhood firsts were showing up and creating these wounds later on in life?
Yeah, it certainly wasn't when I was a kiddo. And even though I went to grad school to become a marriage and family therapist post undergrad, so I was, you know, 21 when I entered into my graduate studies, even then I was trying to convince people that I was fine and unaffected and unbothered, and my parents' divorce didn't do anything to me. And it actually wasn't until probably my mid-late 20s when I was in a relationship myself and his ex came back into the picture. And he was trying to decide whether or not to go back into the relationship with her or stay in the relationship with me. And, automatically I'm like, of course, like this must be so hard for you. And, take the time that you need. And I sort of morph into what I called the cool girl persona, right? Like, I'm so understanding. There's so much context here. And I think both me as therapist, who does actually understand that there's a lot of context and lots of layers why people struggle or feel stuck or, have a hard time making a decision. But then also the me, right? The individual me who was a conglomerate of all of the things that had happened prior to that moment and experiences that had shaped me. And obviously, I'd gone to school for this work, and I was a good therapist, right? I was like a good enough therapist, but I was still very resistant to looking at how my past had affected me. And let me rewind a little bit because I think that the context is really important for the listener. Is that my parents went through a 9-year divorce process? It was really, obviously, really long, objectively long, and there was just a lot of manipulation, gaslighting, psychological abuse, paranoia, just emotional flooding. It was intense. The conflict was really high.
Were you absorbing that from parent to parent? They weren't necessarily taking it out on you, but it's actually what you were absorbing from their relationship.
That's right. Yeah, right. So as this tiny little human, I'm an only child in a small system because I didn't have any siblings where I was watching this go on. And yeah, correct. It wasn't directed at me, but I saw it directed at each other. And, that's really potent. And in fact, yeah, it's like it's huge because sometimes we're like, nothing happened to me. And it's like, no, well, you're in the observer seat and you're watching things happen to the people you love the most, the people you care about the most. And that is having a massive impact on you. And it's also laying the foundation for you about, this is what quote unquote love looks like. This is how you treat people. This is what communication is. This is what conflict is. This is what you should expect. And so as a tiny human, I'm watching this go on and on and on. And my parents were crashing and burning. That's how I describe it, right? Like they were not well. They were struggling. And from my little human perspective, right, I'm like, well, there's no room for me to not be well too. Now, if we ask them, maybe they'd say, of course, there was room for you. We wanted to know what you were feeling, right? But it doesn't really matter because it was my perspective of the situation. And my perspective was, there isn't room. You guys are not doing well. I can't add anything more to the system because then it's really going to break. And so I'm going to pretend to be fine and okay and unbothered and unaffected. And I'm going to put my energy into the things that I do, my extracurriculars. I got really good at whatever I put my mind to. And so I presented to the outside world like I was a well-rounded, well-adjusted kid, and I faked it really, really well. And the reason why I share that story is because I learned to stay far away from my own emotional experience. I learned to be far away from my own pain. I did not know how to be close, connected to it. I didn't know how to have a relationship with it. In fact, it was quite scary for me. And so I became this little girl who was kind of needless and flying under the radar, became a woman, right, who was also very needless and boundaryless and pretended like she was fine and unaffected. So we come back to the story that I was sharing before, where I'm like, of course, right? Like, I totally get it. This must be so hard for you. Don't worry about me. Take the time that you need. And I remember having a conversation with a friend at the time, and it sort of just struck me where I was like, oh my gosh, I am in the same role today as an adult woman as I was as a kiddo, as the way that I was going through my parents' divorce alongside of them, where I'm just this like unaffected, fine, I'm okay. I'm so disconnected from my own emotional experience, from my own boundaries, what feels respectful or disrespectful. And it really clicked for me. And it was, I remember calling him up and removing myself from, the situation and just saying, I'm going to exit and, I hope that you find a path forward for yourself that's aligned for you. And that was the end of it. And it was you know, one of the hardest things that I had really ever done personally for myself, because when you're someone who has historically said that you're fine, and then you finally say that I'm not fine and I am affected and I don't feel respected here, that is a monumental shift in your life. And it was for me. And it was so much that it was like, okay, I did this once, and now I was like, oh, I can do that again, and I can do that again, and I can do that again. And so, you know, that was probably the personal experience in my life that really was the catalyst, like really catapulted me into the work that I already cognitively knew was important to do, right? Because I had been taught it in school, but I hadn't quite been able to give myself the permission and like somatically move myself in that direction to allow myself to actually feel and create change from that place. And then of course, right, it's like I've also worked with so many people, individuals, couples, and families along the way. And like I said before, I was a good enough therapist, but we also know that until you can lead yourself further, it's very hard to lead other people past a certain point too. And so it was something that really opened up my practice as a clinician. And, you know, I kept seeing with the couples and the families I was working with is that where people would get stuck, where they would find themselves back in these unwanted patterns in their lives, right? It was like, oh yeah, no, this is a direct line into the irresolution from your past, often in your family of origin.
Yeah. And there's so many amazing examples in the book that you sort of share that just reinforce everything that you've just said in terms of like being a kiddo. And I think a lot of people would look back and say, oh, you know, no, my parents treated me really well. They were so, they loved me and all of that stuff. But we're sponges, aren't we, when we're kids? So yeah. I'm very intuitive. And so like with what happened to you, even as a bystander, you're like, well, I don't want to make this worse than it is. So I'm going to kind of toe the line. And then I kind of learned to like squash down my own feelings, I suppose, or not feel entitled or not even when you're a kid, you don't even know how to articulate it, do you? So could you maybe give a couple of examples of like these kind of wounds, these childhood wounds that trigger us in adult situations, you know? Things like trust issues and not feeling worthy. Yeah, if you wouldn't mind just kind of going a little bit more into this, because I just think it's going to be so helpful.
Yeah, of course. So when I sat down to write the book, I'm like jotting down, scribbling down all the different wounds that I think, you know, humans come face to face with. And then finally, I sort of thematically get them grouped into these five origin wounds that I describe in the book, which are the worthiness wound, the belonging wound, prioritization wound, trust wound, and safety wound. And listen, this is a framework. You know, for some people, they might use a different language for it. Great. Do whatever feels resonant for you. But it felt like a good framework to give us as the reader to be like, oh, yeah, like I can maybe relate to this, or this one resonates with me.
I could relate to about three of them.
Yeah. I've had so many people who are like, is it possible to have all five? Yeah. Like it is, it is. And also, right, like we want to come at this from an empowered place as opposed to, oh my gosh, you know, I have all five, or I have multiple of these. And that feels really daunting and overwhelming, right? The goal is that this is a really helpful framework that helps us actually identify some of our pain and some of the things that we're still carrying that are dictating our lives for us, so that we can find a way through. And so these five origin wounds, how they get created, endless, endless, endless ways. And the ways in which we internalize them, human to human, can look really different. So for example, if you had a parent who left, who abandoned you as a child, that might get internalized as a worthiness wound for someone. They might say, my parent left because I wasn't good enough for them to stick around for. Someone else might internalize it as a trust wound. The most important people in your life, they they don't stick around. The people that you're expected to trust, they just betray and disappoint you. So don't trust anyone. So I want to just say that out of the gate here, because I don't want anyone to feel like if you hear a story that resonates with your story, that it means that that's the exact wound. You have to really connect it for yourself to think like, what's the story that I created from this? But let me start with the worthiness wound, because this is really the one where I'm like, I think every single human on the planet probably rubs up against a worthiness wound at some point or another.
Yeah.
But for the folks who really have it as a primary wound, a lot of ways that this gets shaped in our earlier years is through conditional love. So if I have any pleasers or perfectionists or performers who are listening right now, your hands are up. This one will probably resonate with you, because I think there's this idea that like, okay, if I perform, if I please, if I'm the comic relief in the family, right? If I do the thing that the adults want me to do or need me to do, then that is the way that I get love or connection or attention or validation. Mm-hmm. And so it's like, okay, you bring home the straight A's, or you know, score the hat trick on the field. Like those are the things that make your parents come closer to you, attached to you in a way that feels meaningful for you. It's also like, oh, if I'm funny, then maybe dad stops hurting my sister, right? So we're looking for the conditions of how the family operates. And as kiddos, we really notice like, okay, when I do this, here's the reaction that I consistently get. Here's the response that I consistently get. If I do Y, here's the other response that I consistently get. So we're starting to learn like, okay, love, right, is conditional, or being chosen is conditional, or, you know, getting validated by a parent or the adult figure in my life, right, is conditional. So we're looking for that. Another way that, you know, a worthiness wound can get created, of course, is with statements of harm, right? For the folks who maybe just heard verbatim, like, you have no value, right? You're unworthy. And it's like, you know, these are really painful things that some of us do hear growing up.
Yeah. What's wrong with you?
Yeah. What's wrong with you? Exactly. Right. So that's going to swing also into a safety wound, because it's going to be part of, you know, verbal abuse. But again, the way that we get it, we internalize it. So for example, I grew up, I had mentioned this before, but my dad, when I was like well-behaved and I did what he wanted me to do and I was easygoing, then he was very present and available and super helpful and fun to be around. And we had like so many great memories. But when I was challenging and difficult, say as like a teenager, and I was, you know, just like battling a little bit and nothing out of the ordinary, but just sort of showing up as your sort of like teenager self, right? Then what would happen is he would punish me by giving me the silent treatment. And why I share that story is because it did contribute to this worthiness wound, that I'm worthy of connection and love and presence and support and help and fun and all of those things when I'm easygoing, mm-hmm. right? But when I am more challenging, then I learn that those things go away, right? Sometimes for days, sometimes for weeks on end, right? And that was a really significant shaping experience for me. And it also kind of layered on top of the belief and perspective that I held already, is that like, you guys are already crashing and burning. There's not a lot of room for me to struggle anyway. Yeah. And then on top of it, oh, when I'm challenging, right? It's like that, then love is taken away from me and contact is taken away. So it was another layer that really reiterated that in order to have ease or peace or love or connection in my home, I needed to show up unbothered myself and unbothering of other people too.
God, it's such deep conditioning, isn't it?
It is.
I mean, the good thing is with your book, you share some strategies in terms of like how we can start to heal from these wounds. And what you also do stress is it's not about bashing the parents or the caregivers. Yes. I think with parents, they don't even realize some of the harm they're doing, right?
Oh, of course. I mean, I think, you know, some folks might, and, you know, absolutely from the get go for this book, and all of my work is never about, you know, bashing parents or the adults in our lives or throwing anybody under the bus, or, you know, we don't have to hate anybody, but we do need to make space to acknowledge what our experiences are. And, you know, sometimes things are really acute and obvious, and, you know, they did harmful things. And other times they're really subtle. And there are things that, you know, when people say like they did the best that they could, that might be true. And also you still might be impacted by something. And that's the work, right? Which is that, okay, maybe they were way better as parents than their parents were to them. Maybe they sacrificed endlessly for you in order to give you a good opportunity in this world. All of those things can be true, and your experience and the impact of the things that happened still has relevancy. And I think sometimes it's really hard for all of us to hold those simultaneous and like sometimes contrasting beliefs of like, I can still be grateful and I can also honor this part of my story. And that's what we're trying to do here, is to make a little bit of space. And other times people are like, oh, well, somebody else has it way worse than I do. I call it wound comparison in the book. And so I don't have a right to feel sad or upset about something that happened in my life, because it's nothing to compare to, you know, my friends or the random stranger I met whose story I heard. And so, yes, right, it's like a real invitation for us to lean into some of this work so that we can break out of some of the unwanted patterns. So like, for example, a worthiness wound, how might that show up in our adult relationships, right? Like, well, are we tying our worth to how we present? Are we tying our worth to what we can offer to someone? Are we tying our worth to how agreeable we can be? Because that's the belief that, like, as long as I'm agreeable and I present this way, then this other person is going to want to be with me, right? Like, that the condition of love, again, is determined by something that requires us to perform or please. That's just an example of it.
Yeah.
You know, I can share a little bit from my own relationship when my husband and I, this was before we were married, but we were in a conflict, and I have no clue what the conflict was about. But I do remember that I was needing to prove my point and needing to be right. And I'm like doubling down, tripling down. I can't stop doing it. And he's like, man, I got it. And I keep going and going. And then boom, you know, there's a moment where shame starts to set in for me and I'm feeling embarrassed about my behavior. But instead of just staying in a shame spiral, I move into curiosity, which this book is all about, right? Is to like actually take a shift towards curiosity to understand what our behaviors are serving. And I offer this right now because many of us are going to identify like, oh gosh, I do that behavior, or oh gosh, I do that thing that I can't stand, or that's unbecoming, or whatever. And I don't want us to become critical of that. I want us to become curious, remembering that our behaviors are protective strategies. Gabby, you had said earlier that you were noticing like sabotage behaviors. Yeah, sabotage is a protective strategy for something, right? It's really working hard to protect you from something that's really scary. And that's what we're trying to figure out in this book. And so when I was able to enter into curiosity for myself and like, why do I need to be right? Why do I need to prove my point? What does that serve? In what way is that protecting me? You know, it brought me back to like, right, I grew up with a father who was manipulative and gaslighting my mom constantly and was like psychologically abusive. And I saw the impact on her, which was paranoia and confusion and a loss of self. And I had equated being wrong, my mom, with powerlessness, unsafety, right? And being right, my dad, with power and control and safety. And so for me, right, that imprint was, if you can make sure that you are right, you will always be safe. And so again, I share that as like, okay, as this observer of the system, and now I'm an adult and I'm watching myself behave in a certain way. And I'm like, whoa, what is happening? Because this is destructive for a relationship. And I cannot just prove my point and need to be right constantly, because that's not going to work. But yeah, I need to understand what this is trying to protect me from. So again, these unwanted behaviors that we see in our lives today, often in our romantic relationships, the but we could see it in friendships and we can see it with colleagues and coworkers and bosses, right? It's like, okay, those patterns that we can't shake, they're going to tie us back to the irresolution from the past. But let me keep going because I know we got a little off from the five wounds. So the second one is the belonging wound. And this is where if your family ever was like, this is how we are, you know, this is how we show up in the world. This is what we believe, we think, right? There's this emphasis, right, on the family. And sometimes there's beautiful things, right, that are about sort of the family belonging, like we do, you know, if there's traditions that a family does, right, like beautiful. But on the other side of that, right, is that if you don't believe, think, or do the way that we believe, think, and do, right, then you're on the outside. Then yeah. you are not part of us.
The black sheep.
Yeah, exactly, right? The black sheep in the family. And it's an intolerance for differences, right? A lot of the time, right? Is that like if you don't believe or think or do in the way that your family expects you to, then they can't tolerate the difference that you are presenting, or they're trying to control you into and like sort of morph you into that. And so with the belonging wound, right, for kiddos, again, if we're going back into the earlier years, Dr. Gabor Mate talks about trading attachment for authenticity, authenticity for attachment, and talks about like how these are two lifelines for a child, right? Attachment, because that's our survival, and then authenticity, right? Like, oh, I'm figuring out who I am. I'm showing up in the world as I am. And if authenticity isn't honored, if there's no space for authenticity, right, then a child is going to trade authenticity for attachment every time because it is survival, because we need it. And so there's that loss, right? It's like, who do I need to be in order to belong here, right? In order to fit in here. And so, you know, again, with the belonging wound, we also see social impacts and societal impacts, and all of that plays into it as well. But of course, when we're looking at the family of origin, right, this first system in which we are learning that you can be as you are and belong here, or you can't be as you are and belong here, right, then we're gonna, that's sort of the origin of where that wound might originate. So how might that show up present day? The desire to fit in. Boundarylessness, right? It's like, ugh, FOMO, right? It's like, okay, I need to be a part of something, so I will cross my own boundaries, or I'll do it at the expense of myself. Or maybe somebody's swinging the pendulum, right? So yeah, the black sheep, and sometimes kiddos take a path of adaptability for a while, but then they might take a path of opposition, right? Where it's like, all right, now I'm going to show up and no one's going to control me, and I'm going to do my own thing, and I'm going to just find my own way, and I don't care what anybody has to say. I don't really care about fitting in at all. And so there can be that pendulum sort of swinging from one extreme to the next, and there's, you know, there's a loss of self there, which is really which is really impactful.
I think about a friend of mine. I used to live in Nashville, and I think he was from Louisiana, and his father was a minister, and he's gay, and he was just the family just kicked him out because of his sexuality.
Yeah.
And, you know, and I remember this because you give a sort of similar-ish example in the book in terms of that belonging. And he would kind of talk about it quite matter-of-factly, but I could feel the pain, you know, underlying in it all. But I just thought it was absolutely horrific. Yeah, just really sad. But then, like what you said, he was very then out, you know, like on his social media and everything else.
Right. It's like, what path do we take in order to, you know, in some ways find our own self-soothing, right? There's a lot of things that could play into the path that someone takes, right? Are they trying to own it for themselves? Are they trying to, you know, certainly not suggesting this for your friend, but like, are we trying to punish the family system in some way and embarrass them, right? Some people do that, right? So there's a lot of different pathways one could take when you're feeling unsupported and criticized and rejected or disowned, and, you know, navigating the world that way. You know, most of us want to fit in, and fitting in is very different than belonging. When you look at kids, like, kids, teenagers, like everybody wants to fit in, wants to be liked. And we trade so much of our authenticity a lot of the time in order to get that approval, right? In order to get the outcome of fitting in. Belonging, right, is just like sort of this deep coming home to self, right? Is that when I belong to myself, when I don't need to prove something to other people, right? It was like where I like the home that I've built for myself inside of myself, right? Then we belong everywhere and also nowhere, as Maya Angelou says, and I share that quote in the book as well. Yeah. But again, it's like the idea is looking for the ways in which we are trying to soothe these wounds present day. What are the behaviors and the choices and the ways in which we are showing up in relationships or the world at large, right? Like, in what way am I trying to find my worthiness, my belonging, my prioritization, the trust and the safety?
It's when the cracks start to show, though, when, you know, you're triggered.
Yes.
Well, this is certainly what I was learning a lot from in your book, without veering too far off your next point, but just in terms of, like, say, trust issues. Mm-hmm. Like, I would think, oh, trust issues maybe has developed since I've been dating. But then mm-hmm. what you made me think about was me as a kid observing within the family units when trust had been broken. And then I was like, shit. this does not come from, this is way, you know, deeper than I thought it was.
Right. Right. And that's the beauty, right? Because it's like, it allows us to see where it is that actually needs resolution. You know, trust ruptures can be big ones, like infidelity or affairs, if that was something that happened in the family system at all. You know, there's significant trust ruptures, betrayals, deceits, lies that can happen, right? Maybe somebody gambled away your education fund. Maybe somebody, you know, took out a credit card in your name when you were a child, right? Like, those things happen. But then also it's in the subtleties of, you know, promises that we don't follow through on as adults. So a parent keeps telling you, yes, we'll go for ice cream. I promise we'll go for ice cream. And then we don't do that consistently. I'm not talking about a one-off because, oh, shoot, the plan changed and we had to, right? I'm not talking about that, but the consistent repetition of, oh, like, your word doesn't follow up, right? Or like, I wait for my parent to pick me up at school and they promise I'll be there on time. And every single time I'm the last one to be picked up, right? It's like these things, they have impacts on us, right? They do. No matter how big, medium, small you want to define it as, but that there is an impact that says, oh, I am learning about the world and about people and whether or not I can trust and believe what the people around me are telling me and what they're doing. And so again, sometimes we see very obvious ones that are like, oh, of course there's a trust thing there, right? Because you went through that thing that seems so obvious. But other times there are really subtle ones, like I just said, and looking for those things to see, like, oh, like, that did put the first rupture there for you in how you relate to trust. It's the same thing I share about an example of the prioritization wound in the book. And right, like, when we as kiddos don't feel like we are important to the important people in our lives, they might be workaholics, they might be struggling with addiction. Maybe there is a sibling who has a mental health challenge where their attention is going there, right? It's like the distractions that take away from prioritizing you as a child. Maybe they have high conflict and their conflict is taking over, or your parents are divorced and your mom is starting to date again and she's getting kind of swooped up in the dating world and seems like all of her time and attention is there and she's not focused on you. But there's a lot of things that could happen. I share an example with a client, Andre, that's his alias in the book, where he loved his mom, respected her deeply. She was a single mama working multiple jobs, doubles every day, except on Sundays where they would go to church together and then go to brunch afterwards. And that was the time they had together before she would go to her afternoon shift. And he would sit here and say, like, you know, she's doing everything she possibly can, sacrificing so much to prioritize me. He could really rationalize it. And it was true. Mm-hmm. And what was also true is that Andre had a prioritization wound, which was that he wanted to feel prioritized by her through time spent with her. And it was like what we were saying before, both can be true. Mama is doing her absolute best and she is sacrificing so much and she is trying to prioritize an incredible life for her son. And son Andre still wants time with her, more time with her, and wants to spend that time and be prioritized through time spent, right? And so it's like, okay, how can we begin to spend time with these wounds so that they're not driving our lives anymore, right? So Andre was showing up in a relationship present day where he was actually deprioritizing his partner. Right. So again, sometimes it's like the wound might show up in a repetitious way of like, oh, I chose a partner who's a workaholic and doesn't prioritize me. Or we sort of embody the wound, right? And we're like, and we wind up extending that wound to the person that we are with. And then the last one is the safety wound, which when we're talking about the absence of safety, we are also talking about the presence of abuse. And so it's a, you know, it's a tender chapter for sure, that I, you know, tell people that definitely take good care. But we're looking at abuse, all different forms of it, negligence, recklessness. And, you know, with trust and safety, it will often present as hypervigilance in an adult, right? So somebody who's constantly scanning their environment, maybe they're having to check their partner's phone or email or DMs or, you know, like always looking over, seeing what's going on, but just feeling like the hypervigilance is the way of creating safety or trust. It's an illusion, certainly, but a way of creating that for themselves present day.
Thank you so much for talking us through them, because when I think of like looking at this through the lens of mental health and us being, you know, part of a mental health and wellness app, it's absolutely huge. But I just, again, I think like so much we don't even realize that we're so deeply conditioned by what we've absorbed that, you know, when people come to a therapist and then and you note this in the book as well, like they come for one thing, but actually it's not the real root of the issue. But yeah, I mean, in terms then of like, and I think you've got a framework for all of the wounds as well, in terms of like a process that you can do. But in terms of like confronting, if the elders are still around, the people that are maybe responsible for these wounds, I think many would just not want to do that, but and not want to maybe cause them pain because they can see it's unintentional. Can we really heal ourselves without having to sort of confront the person?
The good news is that yes, absolutely. And so big sigh of relief. And you know, if the adults are emotionally mature and they're able to receive, you know, a conversation and feedback, you know, then that can be really beautiful. In fact, I think there's something very special about, you know, having that reconciliation with someone who, you know, impacted you in a certain way and, you know, having them be able to acknowledge it and, you know, take responsibility or apologize. I think that that can feel deeply relieving and can feel like a balm, you know, to the pain, to the wound. And also, a lot of people are not able to do that. And I think, you know, in fact, probably a higher percentage are not able to show up in the way that we might want them to. And so, no, we do not need to go back to the source. In fact, for many people, going back to the source would be rewounding, harmful, damaging, especially if we're talking about someone who was abusive. And so the beauty of relationships is that we can do one, some much of that healing on our own. And two, we get to do that healing with other human beings who are emotionally mature, who are safe, who can hold that space for us, who can witness us clearly. And, you know, I'm always amazed. Like sometimes that's our partners, sometimes that's our dear friends, sometimes that's our therapist, and sometimes that's people we've just met. Like I've run lots of retreats where we do very deep work. You know, I'm no longer shocked by it, but there's, you know, sort of an amazement where, you know, you have somebody where they've met each other in under 24 hours and they're holding space for one another and they're working through such deep healing work and they're bearing witness to one another's pain. And it's like, yeah, even strangers, right? Where there's at least, you know, some kind of container, but where strangers are even able to offer a witnessing that is so relieving and so healing and so soothing for us. And so, no, we do not need the originator of the pain to participate in the healing for all of the reasons. And thank, you know, again, thank goodness some of them are deceased. I mean, we would be held hostage if we needed them to participate in this.
Right.
And so, no, any human being who can bear witness and who can hold safety for us is going to be such a huge component to the healing process.
I think as well, a big indicator that you've been triggered is maybe a reaction to something that is bigger than it should be, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So somebody is a romantic relationship and maybe you've not heard from the person in a couple of days or whatever, if you're dating, or this could just trigger some kind of abandonment issue. Mm-hmm. And then I guess the good news is you catch it and then you would say you self-soothe to kind of bring yourself down?
Yeah, I think obviously
to not react in a volatile way.
Our nervous system work is really powerful work in this, for one. Two, I really love to lower the bar because the reality is that we react because we react, right? Right. We react because our internal system is saying that something is wrong and something is unsafe or something doesn't feel right, or there is a threat, right? It's constantly coding like safety threat, safety threat, safety threat. And so it can be really hard for us to like talk ourselves down from the ledge when our body is sounding the alarm, right? Now, again, that's why nervous system work is very helpful to begin to have some type of relationship with the body, to be able to soothe, to be able to learn, you know, where there is a present day threat as opposed to a historical threat that is presenting. You know, that's why we always say, you know, you'll hear therapists say, you know, you make sense. You make sense with context. We all do. We all make sense with context. It might not make sense based on like, whoa, what just happened? You know, if you've ever had one of those moments where, you know, a partner or a friend reacts to something, you're like, whoa, what happened? You know, and you're like, what did I say? Like, what just went down? You know, and something did actually go down, even though it might not have gone down in this particular moment. So we make sense. We make sense in context. But the more that we understand our history, right, and our origin wounds and our story, right, like that is going to help us work with these parts when we are activated in the current moment. So again, I always like to bring the bar down for us because, you know, this is lifetime work. It really is. You know, it's not something that just happens overnight. It's lifetime work that we come to over and over and over again. The charge changes, right? When I think about healing, I'm like, oh, the charge is what lessens. It doesn't, the scar goes away. The wound is gone. You'll never confront it or face it ever again. You will, but the charge that it has on you starts to lessen and weaken. And that's the practice that we're trying to do. So, right. Yes, I think reactivity is a neon sign that there is an origin wound that's needing some attention. If we're blowing things out of proportion where it's like, whoa, like that reaction didn't match what just happened, right? That's a good indicator that something historical has presented. The sabotage patterns that you were talking about before, right? If we're sabotaging relationships or certain things, again, remembering that this is a self-protective strategy, but we're pushing people away or we're, you know, doing something to the relationship to make it end before we get hurt or whatever it is, right? Like that's a good indicator. The dysfunctional patterns that I had said before. And then also I love the, you know, you can give advice that you can't take. That's also an indicator that there's irresolution, right? It's like, you're able to tell everybody else, you know, oh, don't you dare text your ex when they text you. But then when your ex texts you, you're right back texting them. Or, right. Oh, feel confident when you go into that job interview and you can do it. And then you're, you know, feeling deeply insecure yourself and you don't have the confidence, or, right. It's like when we can give advice to other people, but that we can't seem to integrate for ourselves, right. That's a good little star that says, okay, there's some more work to do there. So again, the identification of the wound in the first place is where we all start, right? It's like, we just have to acknowledge that the wound exists, or that the many wounds exist.
Right.
And then we have to work through a practice of witnessing the pain and grieving. And I think that this for me is where, you know, when we work through this part of the origin healing practice of beginning to witness and beginning to grieve more and more, that's what you're talking about, is like, how do we bring ourselves down? So again, nervous system work, regulation, very powerful. And when we are witnessing and grieving and making contact with this more, you know, that quote that's attributed to Viktor Frankl about, like, between stimulus and response, there is a pause, right? And in that pause, right, is like an opportunity for our freedom. And it's so true and so potent, but that we have to be able to extend the pause, right? Because sometimes, like, the pause happens between stimulus and response, but it's bam, and now I'm reacting. And I don't even know what I'm reacting for, what happened, or why I'm even hurt or upset or disappointed or betrayed or feeling unworthy. But when we spend time with our origin wounds, what happens is that pause extends, right? It's like, oh, I know this. I know this wound. I am feeling really insecure right now. I am feeling unworthy, or I'm feeling like I'm struggling to trust this person right now, yeah. Or I'm struggling to feel like a priority in this person's life right now, and yeah. Noticing that. And when we have spent adequate time witnessing and grieving the origin pain, the origin wounds, then we start to move more into an empowered state, which says, how do I actually want to respond in this moment? Because this book is not just about identifying your wounds. It's also about seeing the ways that we respond to them, usually from a self-protective position, yeah. And shifting it to a relationally protective position. Because if I am self-protective, that usually means that I'm becoming critical of you, or I'm going on the attack, or I'm defending, or I'm shutting down, or I'm putting the wall up.
We'll jump into worst case. Right.
Yeah.
It's that negative inner critic, isn't it? That you've got on top of the wound. Mm-hmm. And then it's like you go to worst case. Well, that's certainly what I
yeah.
would
do. You can go to, you know, right? You're like, I'm speaking for myself.
Yeah.
You can go to worst case, but you go to a place where you want to protect yourself. And sometimes people protect by fighting. Sometimes people protect by fleeing. Sometimes people protect by freezing. Right. And I think our work is to, when we can extend that pause, then we can become much more connected to the ways that we communicate our pain, the ways that we navigate conflict when it presents, the ways that we navigate our boundaries being crossed or us not opening ourselves up enough to people, right? And we are again in this empowered position to choose something, right? That is going to expand ourselves and the relationship, as opposed to contracting it. Mm-hmm. And that's the beauty, right? Because it's not just like, oh, let's identify these wounds and let's spend time in our history. This is about how do we actually live the lives and the relationships that we crave and desire for ourselves today, and seeing our part in this too, right? Is that if I'm protecting myself from this wound, what it often means is that I am disconnecting from the relationship. And part of our work is, how do I connect to the relationship and work through this, yes, individually, but also relationally as well? And it's hard, it is hard work, but there is a path forward for this.
So then sharing the wound, I mean, that's got to be so vulnerable, haven't you, to do that with whoever it is, but like,
so vulnerable.
If it's somebody that you want to be close to in terms yeah. of for your own kind of healing, like, do you see in the work that you do with your clients, do you see the benefits from revealing the wound, because it feels to me very scary.
Absolutely. In our intimate, close relationships, right? If we're talking about partnership, and I'm not talking like your first date, your second date, I'm like partnership, right? It's like, we need to know each other's origin wounds. We need to know each other's history, right? That is so such important information for us to understand each other's pain, each other's reactions, each other's behaviors, and the ways that we try to protect ourselves in relationship. And so, yeah, to me, I mean, that is a non-negotiable in partnerships, is really understanding that and having an intimate understanding of each other's inner worlds. Because when our partners understand it too, there's so much compassion and grace that can be offered there. And I think, you know, if that feels really scary, then, you know, maybe it's with a therapist, right? Or some, you know, someone who's like a trusted confidant for you, where you're like, okay, I'm going to start to practice this, you know? And I think once you get the hang of it, it probably feels less threatening. But for some who are like, oh my gosh, this is my first entry point into, you know, doing this work, this sounds awful. This sounds like death. Like, I don't want to do this. Then I think it's like, okay, can you start to connect some of it with yourself first? And then might we start to peel back some of those layers? Maybe we share it with a therapist. Maybe we share it with a dear friend and begin there and start to see that people can actually hold your story alongside of you. I mean, that's the beauty, is that you're not in isolation doing this. We're not meant to be in isolation doing this. We are meant to heal through relationships. We have to have relationships. If it's relationships that wound, then relationships must be a part of the healing. We cannot do this in isolation of other people. So we have to bravely and courageously walk ourselves out there, no matter how scary it feels.
What about a bottle of Jack Daniels? Can we bring my...
We got to leave the Jack on the side.
Oh, damn.
Uh-huh. Damn. Shoot.
So much food for thought. And again, I cannot stress enough, everybody, like you say, has got wounds of some shape or form.
Yes.
It's unavoidable, really. So everybody can benefit from this book. I know I did very, very much. But then you mentioned about the therapy thing and like coming from the UK. Mm-hmm. I've never seen, I've not really, I suppose, looked for it, but like a therapist that specifically works with my origin wounds. Is that a thing?
Mm-hmm.
It is?
Well, certainly this is my terminology around like the origin wounds, but marriage and family therapists are trained in family systems, right? That's our work, is understanding the systems that we all grew up in. And so I think that perspective, if you are interested in doing some of this work one-on-one with someone, and I love that you hold such a beautiful space for, you know, such a large UK community, and especially where it's like, you know, maybe not as therapy focused and, you know, prominent in the same way that maybe it is in the US.
Right.
And so incredible, incredible work that you're doing. But yeah, marriage and family therapists, any systems therapists are going to be looking at the family of origin and how that has shaped you and how that plays into your patterns. And so, yes, that would be my recommendation, is like looking for a marriage and family therapist or a couple and family therapist. Even if you are single, I mean, that's where the misconception is that like, you have to be in a relationship to go to a marriage and family therapist. I see so many individuals who are, whether they're dating or not dating or whatever, it doesn't matter. They're looking at how they grew up and understanding the patterns that are showing up in their lives today. So that's an important note to make.
Wow. Wow. Such fascinating stuff. I can't let you go before we close on the Happy Life Project's last 5 in 5. So it's the same 5 questions that I ask every guest. It's kind of like a quick fire thing. Okay. When and where are you at your happiest?
When I am with my friends and family, and when I'm in nature. Yeah, like when I'm with my most like intimate, close humans. And if you can put those together out in nature, then I'm really happy.
Okay, what's your favorite thing to do that nourishes your mental health?
Also nature. I think nature is such a... it's just one of the most beautiful offerings. Thank you, Mama Earth, for it. That is just available to us at all times. And it is so healing for mental health. And honestly, for me, it's like deep conversations, like one-on-one with people are really restorative for my mental health. Yeah. And sleep. Oh, I can't go without sleep. Yeah.
What piece of advice do you now know that you wished somebody would have told you earlier that would have made you a happier person?
That it's okay to feel, you know, and that will make sense for anybody who's listened to this, obviously, knowing my story. But I do wish, and I'm also a big believer that like we come in contact with our lessons when we're able to. And, but I think I wish that I would have known and that there would have been space for me to feel and be with my pain much earlier, because it was a lot of decades and a lot of years of being disconnected from it. And I think it would have been nice to have space for it growing up.
What is the most important one thing that needs to change to make the world a happier place?
It's a big question. I mean, gosh, there's so much. But I think within the context of what we're talking about today, there's an exercise actually at the end of the book that a psychotherapist, Michael Kerr, offers, which is to think of your mother as your grandmother's daughter and see how that shifts your perspective. And I think there's something really potent and beautiful about that, of remembering like, everybody has a story. Everyone was a tiny human once at one point in their lives who went through something significant or challenging or faced something that, and, you know, we've heard people say, we remember, like, you know, nothing about what that person might be going through. And I think there's something so important and meaningful about remembering that all human beings were tiny human beings at one point. And it just sort of plays into what I was saying before about the context, right? Because it shifts our perspective. If we can remember that our partner was a tiny human in a heated moment of conflict, because I think it allows us to return to grace and compassion when we can hold that true. So I don't know that it necessarily is like what will make us a happier place, but I think a more healed place, if we can remember that we were all tiny at one point and we're all carrying, you know, around unresolved wounds that are asking for our attention.
So final question is, what is a simple actionable step that we can take when it comes to discovering our origin wounds and breaking family patterns that will help us on our mission to building a happier life?
Okay, two things. The first is, and you had mentioned this before, but asking yourselves, like, where am I most reactive in my life and with whom? So that's a great action step, because that's going to point you right to something immediately. So if you're like, I am ready to pull up my sleeves and I'm ready to dive in, right? It's like, okay, where are you most reactive in your life and with whom? It's going to point you to your resolution. And then honestly, this question that a therapist once asked me that was so profound and potent, which was, you know, what did you need most as a child and not get? And to answer that question without the caveat, without the explanation or the rationalization or the need to protect them, but to just answer that question and put a period at the end of the sentence. What did you need or crave most as a child and not get? And just see what comes up for you there, because that those two things are going to bring you right into this work if you're willing to go there. Vulnerable, certainly, but I know we're all here to do beautiful, brave work, and it is so, so deeply worth it.
Oh, I'll say, I honestly, reading your book this week, I felt lighter. Just things started. And I was like, oh, I've self-labeled that. I was like, wait, no, maybe I'm not actually, like, you know, emotionally unavailable, whatever. So hang on, this came from somewhere.
Right. And that's it, right? It's like going from the self-critic to the curiosity, which then leads us to compassion and grace. And again, it's not like, oh, this makes sense, and so I'm going to just stay this way for the rest of my life. Like, oh, this makes sense, but now I don't have to just be at odds with this part. Instead, I can see that it's trying to protect me from something, that it's in service of something, but it's sort of out of whack, right? Because the things that were in service for us before as kiddos are usually not the same things that are of service for us as adults in our romantic relationships or our friendships or just the intimate relationships in our lives. And I think there's just an update to our operating system, you know, that needs to happen. And so, yeah, the origins of you, I think, you know, the reason I wrote it was that I know that so many people are never going to go to therapy, or, you know, they don't have access to it. And I also know that it's really vulnerable work that some people want to do from the comfort of their own home, you know, and it's like, I wanted to put something, like package something for people to be able to begin to do sort of at their own pace in the comfort of their own home, to begin to dive into this very important work. So,
yeah, well, it's certainly a book I'm going to be returning to. Yeah. So thank you so much for writing it. And thank you for your time today as well and being so generous with it. Just incredible stuff. So for people to find you, I know you've got a huge community on Instagram. So it's Mindful MF for Freddie T.
Yeah. As in marriage, family, therapy. Right. So yes, you can find me there. You can follow me there. You know, in the link, you can see all the offerings and whatnot. If you're in the States, we have a group practice of clinicians who practice very similarly to me. But if anybody is looking to do some of this work, and we also have a mindful coach on the team who can work with anybody anywhere. So if people are really interested in diving into this, you can reach out.
And you've got your own podcast too.
Yeah, This Keeps Happening, where I talk to anonymous guests.
Such a good name.
Yeah, it's so good. And it's been wonderful, about challenges that they're facing, origin wounds that they have, patterns that they can't shake. So yeah, that's been a fun project as well.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Thank you for all this content. I'm sure it's just helping so many people. Helped me.
Thank you.
Yeah.
Good. I'm so happy to hear that. Thanks, Gabby.
Hello, it's Gabby back with you. Big, big thanks again to Vienna Farron. And I'm going to say it one more time. I highly, highly recommend you reading The Origins of You. And a big thank you to you, my friend, for listening to this very episode of the Happier Life Project. Now, one more thing to do, and you probably know what I'm going to say. It's time for the important housekeeping. If you are suffering with your mental health, there is a crisis button on the My Possible Self app, which will signpost you to the correct information for immediate expert advice. Those of you who are listening on one of the podcast platforms, the My Possible Self app is completely free to download. You can access all of the content and you don't need to worry about it costing you anything. If you are in crisis or you think you may have an emergency, please do call your doctor or the emergency services immediately. The views expressed in this podcast are solely those of the interviewer, which is me, and the interviewees. The content of this podcast is for informational and educational purposes only and should not be considered as a substitute for professional or medical advice. The Priory Healthcare are not involved in the production or content of this podcast. If you found this episode helpful, please do subscribe if you're listening on one of the podcast platforms. Share with your friends, share with your family, share with anyone that you think could benefit from hearing our content. And please leave a review if you have the time and you haven't done already, because again, that just helps others to find us. And to find and follow us on social media, if you're not already there, we are at My Possible Self and I've been at Radio Gabby. Do take care. And I'll see you on the next one. Bye for now.